me, John Gilbertson, and I'm here instead of Mike Bisich. I learned that I was given this talk about 24 hours ago, and I came here in the airplane. It was delayed. It was a long story. So I'm going to see these slides just as you see them. This is like the first time. I don't know how long it's going to take. I've put a few pieces of slides in here. I'll either go through or go on, depending on how fast I'm going. And I hope it will work out okay. First of all, I'm from Massachusetts General Hospital. I've been there for about, maybe 6 months now. And what I've learned, the first thing I learned is that when you go give a talk in a place like this, when you're from Mass General, you take images like that, okay? Basically this says that we're old and we're proud of it, okay? And that, which is all fine, and it's really part of the mindset. You get pictures like this. We have horses, we had horses. We still have our antique little carriages around to impress people and all. But what's interesting, though, is that if you go into our main conference room, where I'll get together and plan the future, there's no internet connection. None. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that this is about the roadmap for the evolution of a pathology department that is digital. There are places that are doing this a lot better than we are. So I'll give you my ideas and what I've seen in other places, and what we have at Mass General, but I'm no an expert in this. Our group is way behind in many, many ways. Okay, so it's a complicated environment I'm talking about today. Mass General's in downtown Boston. We have a research campus in Charlestown, a middle campus, I guess, near the what's called North Station. The medical school is uptown a bit. And we have what's called our Partners Healthcare, which is our corporate headquarters in the Prudential Center. Across the river, there's MIT. We work with them closely. And of course, there's Harvard, other buildings and hospitals in the Boston area. It's great fun. I basically literally am on the road driving around to Boston almost every single day. And you can't imagine how much that enhances your quality of life. It's just great. Okay, all right. So what I'm going to talk about here is just some basic things on our roadmap and how we're going on them, and other places also. It's not just Mass General. It'll be something about Pittsburgh and other places. But the key point here, it's not a list of things. That's not the most important thing at all. In fact, this is the most important thing. To get to digital pathology, if you will, what you need are pathologists who want to get there and are willing to, take the hit in terms of time, effort, failure sometimes, to get to a point where these technologies actually work. If you have that, you don't need a roadmap. If you don't have that, your roadmap is pretty much worthless. So having said that, that's the most important thing. Well, everything else is downhill, and we'll continue. Okay, in terms of digital pathology, the poster boy for this has always been imaging, especially whole slide imaging, at least to me. If we can image all of our slides easily, effectively, even better if a robot can do it for us, we have the potential to apply computational power, network connectivity, the drivers of the modern world, basically, to our research and our practice. If we can't, that part of our practice will always be, deprecated eventually as other fields go faster. Also, if you can image with different illuminations, with different markers, a different sampling, you can see morphology in a very different way. I think all of you know this. I won't demonstrate it here. You all understand what's going on if you can do multispectral imaging or fluorescent imaging and that kind of stuff. And it puts us on the right side, if you will, of Moore's Law. What's interesting today that wasn't true, say, 5 years ago, is that there are a fair number of companies out there, some very large ones, some very, very large ones, actually, that are looking at this as a platform for applications. In other words, not just I'm going to build an imaging robot, I'm going to use the output of that robot to do clinical stuff. This is especially true, by the way, overseas, where there aren't so many pathologists, and most people never get a pathologist's opinion on their biopsies. Okay, what we decided to do to make this happen, because we had no one in place to do this, we hired a PhD and told her, you know, build a laboratory, get funded, build a laboratory, and get machines for us. And she's actually done this. She's Hikaku Yagi. I've worked with her for many, many years. We have basically a research laboratory, and we have robots very soon. We've paid for them in our clinical histology laboratory and in our slide room. The idea here basically is multi-layered, but the first is that, whoops, that's not good, is that imaging begins in histology. So from our point of view, and I think this is pretty accurate, that imaging does not start when a photon hits a CCD. It happens well before that, in the fixation of tissue, the cutting of tissue, the staining of tissue, et cetera, et cetera. And what we're finding is that the histology laboratory, which was, when I was starting out, completely manual and very slow, and had very large batch processes, is changing, becoming more of a robotic environment with a continuous flow of tissue. Maybe 15 or so slides, maybe a slide a minute, maybe, coming out of the systems. And when that happens, it changes the whole idea about how we can use imaging in pathology. Because if you have to have, if you have a histology laboratory that's creating, you know, 500 slides available at 9 in the morning, it doesn't matter how good your imaging is, and it doesn't matter how fast you can image, you're not going to image. Because the pathologist, you know, has a tea time at 5 o'clock and he wants his slides or something like that. You would take too long to get it done. But if you're continuously generating slides, we're very close to getting machines that keep up with that process. In our experience, the fastest machines we see right now that can image entire slides reliably, continuously over the entire cover slip, basically, is running about 3 minutes a slide, which is pretty good, and a lot faster than it was even a few years ago. Okay. So once you get to that idea, we're going to put imaging into histology at some point, either before the diagnosis happens, before a slide gets to a pathologist, or more likely after a pathologist has seen a slide and wants something done to it. A lot of things become important. One is image quality and standardization. You'd be surprised how unstandardized our glass slides are. I mean, one of the reasons that we see a lot of devices, and one of the things we see most is that machines fail to image because they can't pick up the slide, because the slide or the label was somewhat different. We see it all the time. Also, if the thickness of a tissue section is a really important parameter for image quality. And I don't have any data here because it's been presented by our PhD later on, but it's remarkable when you go from a 2-micron section to a 5-micron section to a 7-micron section, how the image quality improves. And it's because unlike your eye, which can accommodate, machines can't. Okay, imaging decisions have to be embedded in histology orders. It's not like give me a 5-micron H&E. It will and is becoming give me a 5-micron H&E, but stain it, but run it onto this machine at this wavelength at this sampling, right? That's just another step of the process. Barcoding is actually important, and in fact, I wouldn't even recommend imaging before barcoding. We are fortunate to have a very good barcoding system at Mass General. It's interesting, however, what actually happens. Well, I'll get that later on. Hold on. And then it's also important to figure out what you're going to do with the images after you have them. there's a lot of pressure, at least where I'm at, to put all these images inside the LIS, which is extremely hard to do, first of all. But second of all, most of the applications for the images aren't directly clinical. So the policy we've kind of gone to now is one that Dr. Sinard from Yale kind of published a few years ago, is that every image we get, for the most part, gets sent two ways, to a clinical archive and to a non-clinical archive, for different purposes, basically. And then the need for clinical, image technicians, that's a real hard thing. I mean, it's hard to find a person that can actually image, understand the complexity of imaging a slide. We're trying to find people, and it's actually pretty hard to do. Okay, speed does matter in all areas of imaging. We talk about all the time in these conferences. If you come to any of these conferences before, they've talked about this all the time. Image capture, how fast can you image a slide at what resolution, basically? A lot of activity here, machines getting faster and faster. There's a lot of talk about how fast a pathologist can actually scan and zoom across a slide to make a diagnosis. And again, what's interesting here is a number of companies getting actively involved in this area, either directly in pathology or in the general issue of large images. Microsoft has a whole group working on this now. Other companies are also actively involved. And again, I hate to do this and not say who the companies are, but I didn't know I was going to give this talk until like now. And I've got a relationship with these companies, and I don't know what they want me to say. So this is actually happening. And I'm sorry about this. I just don't know what to do. What's interesting, though, is probably the most important thing in terms of speed is in histology again. That's the point is really important, that if the machines can allow us to create slides in a continuously reliable way, not a bunch of batches, these devices are actually fast enough to manage them pretty well today, or very close to. Actually, this device is actually a fascinating device. It's from Japan. It's a company called Karabu. It will automatically pick up a block and slice and basically cut the tissue section, put it on a slide. It does it beautifully. It does it fast. It'll run at 2 microns reliably. It doesn't tear tissue. It doesn't fold tissue. It does things that robots should not be allowed to do, at least in my opinion. It's getting very good. Okay, let's continue. And the other piece of this, of course, and we'll talk about this in some detail, I'm sure, is once you have an image, what do you do with it? And there's numerous, there are projects in all areas, image analysis, you know, can you pick up, can you do automated QA? Can you make a diagnosis for parts of the world that don't have pathologists? Telepathology, obviously. Can you put this data into reports or into conferences? Can you use with this even digital stain? In other words, can I image either in a different way, say multispectral or fluorescently, or can I take my image data and convert it in some way where I see parts of histology, morphology I couldn't see before? All of this is ongoing, and it's actually very interesting, actually. Okay. The other part of this, obviously, is that for years and years, we've had some pretty good systems that manage our reporting, if you will, our textual reporting. We now have a chance to put both our histology workflow, basically, or diagnostic workflow, and reporting workflow together in one screen on the pathologist's desktop. I think many of you have seen systems like this, I'm sure. We basically have a split screen. I've got a bunch of little slides. I can click on one of them. Up comes a virtual microscope. I can zoom, pan, make a diagnosis, make a mistake, whatever, and get, ideally, my work done in a better way. I'm not saying we're there yet. Now we're getting every year closer and closer and closer. Okay, I'll ignore this. One area that I find is really fascinating is the pathologist's desktop. Not the computer screen, but the actual top of the desk. We have at our institution fine pathologists, and they got together to create, we have a new chairman, he's important. And we get a chairman, we get the chance to have new space redesigned, okay? And this is like, it happens every quarter century, it's a big deal. And so these guys got together and did a wonderful thing. And if you looked at what happened, nothing really changed in the pathologist's desk. We still had my computer. My computer was here, and my microscope was over here, and there was no space for a nice, useful monitor, so nothing changed. So it's an important area to think about. In radiology, as you guys know, there are companies that do nothing but design reading rooms. We have not even close to this way in pathology. At some point we'll get there, we hope. Okay, this, you can't read this, I'm sorry. That's my fault. But and finally, the amount of systems available. I think right now in our complete environment, we probably have around 6 to 7 vendor products in whole slide imaging plus everything else. The need for standards is really, really important for a whole range of reasons. These devices are not the same. Some devices are very fast, but not very flexible. Some are very flexible, not very fast. Some can do things wonderfully in oil, some cannot. So it's more of a modality. It looks a lot like radiology in many ways as things evolve. And again, we don't have standards right now. There is a working group, DICOM Working Group 26. They're slowly plodding along, but it takes an awful long time. Okay. All right. So that's imaging. I mean, I didn't show you a lot of images. I didn't do all that because I know you've seen most of this stuff and we have limited time. But there's more to digital imaging, obviously, than that. And one of those things is at least the strategic use of our LIS systems. And I know people talk about this in some detail and there'll be disagreements. But essentially, for as long as I've been in this business, which is a long time, not a long, long, long time, but a long time, we've had AP systems and CP systems. And they did not talk to each other. They didn't like each other. It was just totally separate worlds. This really has to stop. It has to change, especially if we're going to a molecular world where, these things merge. And that's just something that we're working with our vendors right now, and we don't have a good answer here. There are a number of ways we could do this. It's not straightforward. What I got here. One of these ways is through middleware, and as we talked, I think you'll talk about this in some detail later on today. I don't talk about that now. The other way is simply allowing modalities or modules to exist inside the LIS, like imaging modules, structured data modules, tissue tracking modules. No one product, no matter how good that product is, does everything well. And to get to a real working system, we have to allow to have good modules to interact with good systems, not just a system that's good in some things. Okay. Finally, the idea of a warehouse. LIS systems are wonderful things, but they're transaction systems. My people spend so long writing reports, running reports, fooling around with reports because they have to get to the database and change something. It really is sad, frankly. We don't have any capability to do what-if scenarios, so what we've decided to do is basically put together a warehouse. And it was interesting what actually happened. We tried to do this. We're looking at this carefully now. You think you'd have your AP system and your CP system would put data into a warehouse. Makes sense. That's not the easiest way to do it, unfortunately, today. What you do is take your data from your AP system and your CP system through HL7 interfaces up to electronic health record and then down again. It's sad. It's unfortunate. That is true, at least where we are right now. This is the thing. One thing here is that having AP and CP systems that are different, really, it has to be changed somehow. When I was a pathologist years ago, the first talk I ever gave in a little research round to Pittsburgh was about, we were definitely going to get this done in about 2 years. That was about, 15 years ago. So I was young and ignorant then. Now I'm probably just ignorant. But that's where we are. Okay. All right. structured data, another kind of key component where we're going here. You guys know this. I'm probably speaking to the choir on this one. But narrative text is absolutely killing us in virtually everything except what we get paid to do, which is to send reports to clinicians. More and more, our data is reconfigured by other users, whether it be researchers or repositories or public health organizations or tissue banks or cancer registries, whatever. And there are numerous components here. And I want to just go through them a bit, because when I talk to some people in the vendor community, especially, that's not clear to people. One of them is the problem of having multiple specimens or multiple findings in one data field. And we all do this in the gross description field and the found diagnosis field. You know, part A is whatever, then part B is whatever, and part C is, and then there's three blocks on part A. All of that's in one big field in the database. And the one can pull that data out, and one can run a Perl expression across it and, you know, suck the data out. It's extremely painful to do and not easy to do, and there are mistakes made. So that's the first thing that we are trying to get our handles on. Narrative text, again, is very good, but it's also limited. If you look at our reports, all the reports in every place I've ever been, put it that way, anywhere, there are a significant number of them are not complete, put it that way. Things you think should be there aren't there for whatever reason. Then we have the issue of auto-coding. How many of you have an LIS that auto-codes? Yeah, it's really going down. It used to be far more than that, I think, for a whole lot of reasons. It doesn't work that well. I know that. But what that means, we have human beings doing this now. And again, that's expensive, and again, mistakes are made. Because at the end of the day, for many, many of our users, what people are, our data, when it gets to them, has been somehow coded by somebody. Some practices, I'm thinking of some people, I'm thinking of Henry Ford, for example, others, seem to have done a good job of creating an environment for structured data. I will tell you that at Mass General, we've done a horrible job. I mean, in fact, we've done nothing that worked yet. It's one of those things, and we are hiring a person whose job will be to at least make it happen theoretically. If the pathologists don't use it, we can't stop that. At least get something going. And that person is being hired right now. Okay. Again, we have horses. That's good. Interesting. It begins to hurt ourselves in a weird way. We have an issue. We feel that there is not enough time in a residency program to train the pathologists in the molecular world. Because you have to have so many months in X and so many of Y and so of Z. The idea was, okay, if we can prove that our pathologists have done X number of, Whipple procedures, and that they have been accurate, or their diagnosis was the same as the pathologist's diagnosis in some percentage of cases of certain types, can we then make an argument that we probably don't need 6 months of something, but maybe 2 months, or we can document that perhaps the person has done it and can move on? That would be wonderful. We can't do it because, unless I hire someone, this is good, and go and code my free text for me, which is a great thing. So it is a serious issue. All right, enterprise systems. This is something that I think is very exciting, but a lot of pathologists I talk to are kind of worried about. You shouldn't be worried. Here's the basic issue. Over the past, let's say, 10 to at least 15 years, the enterprise IT environment has gotten stronger. Okay, we've had health systems, electronic health records. We've had the CIO, the superstar CIO who controls everything. It's life. It's how it is. When that happened, the pathology systems became less and less important in the big picture, if you will. Now, you'll hear a lot, I'm sure, today about the federated model in where the pathology department or other departmental systems are the center of truth, basically, and the electronic health record basically will point to those systems for information. And it's a great model. And we should try to get to that model. It's a good thing. But in my pathetic world, the world I live in, okay, the enterprise is big, really big, okay? And the department is small, quite small, okay? And the enterprise controls IT vision, you know, more or less, but it definitely it pays for funding, it's funding. If I want to buy a hard drive, you know, I don't go to my chairman, I go to my CIO, okay? Okay, so what happens? You know how this works. Specimens appear at our laboratory. We generate a report. The report goes zipping through an HL7 field, which interface that may not be the best thing for it, but it goes through. And then it gets into this electronic health record system. There can be many types of it, whatever. At Mass General, there's a clinical system called CAS and a research/DID system called RPDR. I won't tell you what those mean because I'll probably get it wrong, but they're there. And that's where most of our clinicians get their data from, our data from, okay? There's also getting worse, not better, okay? That's why I think we call this thing better. This is it's not good enough now for the CIO to get our data. They want our tissue, okay? They've decided it's an enterprise asset, and it is, okay? So there's a project right now, and you know, I'm co-chair of this thing, whether like it or not, to create what's called an enterprise master specimen index across partners health system. This is a kind of big deal. So, and then even worse than that, if you will, at Mass General in a way, at partners, genetic sequencing, if you will, you know, big science, you know, big sequencing stuff, is not done with pathology departments at all. It's done in a enterprise held, if you will, laboratory over near MIT somewhere. Because apparently, this is before my time, when the enterprise was trying to look at, you know, molecular pathology, if you will, molecular testing, the pathology departments didn't get their act together. Well, that's definitely true, obviously. And they lost this piece of very important work. So how do we deal with this? Again, I don't know why it's even there. Why is that even there? That's Boston. There are a number of options. One is to basically hide on the desk and say this is horrible. Other ways to get involved, I think you have to get involved. You really have to. Basically, what we decided to do is merge our pathology IT resources with the enterprise. That seems counterintuitive, but basically gave us a lot more leverage into the enterprise. Okay? We were them, and that's a good thing. We did this actually in Pittsburgh and also now at Mass General. And this means that my people are now enterprise people, and most of my time is enterprise time. I spend most of my time outside my department today. And we think this is the best place for us in the future of pathology. Okay, so we support the enterprise. And a number of ways we can help them a great deal. And basically, if we do our job well, we have great leverage inside the enterprise. One is what's called the 100 feet, the creation of the data, the creation of the tissue, enterprise master specimen index has to start somewhere, and we have the tissue, okay? Also, I'll get to the centers of pathology is complicated and more important every day. So there's a lot of things we can do if we play the game, if you will. More importantly, there's more than one enterprise to play with, and that's, you know, in my environment, we have partners, which is the corporate, our corporation. We have Harvard, which is our university, and they don't like each other too much, believe it or not. So we work with both, and I spend basically a day a week at the Cutway Library, which is the Harvard Medical School Library, just working with Harvard directly to keep our options open. Because essentially, in a digital world, I mean, you know, everything you have can be distributed very easily. It's open for everybody. It's always going to be that way. You have to be there almost everywhere. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that you can also kind of counterattack. You can use the enterprise kind of for you. Okay? Because a lot of people don't think that. I have to do something. I have to send my data to the HL7 feed, to the electronic health record, and I'm done. Yeah, that's true, but also it can come back the other way, if you think about it. Now, I think Dr. Digay is in the room. He's going to give a talk, I think, sometime about some of the things that they're doing there. But the key issue is that the total testing cycle, right, the pre-analytical component, the analytical component, and the post-analytical component. And for many years, all the laboratory had was the analytic component. What test was ordered and how it was interpreted was outside our scope entirely. Because we can work within the provider order entry system and the electronic health record system, we can do a number of useful things. We can put our information in the provider order entry system. We can put a great deal of rules in there to help the clinician do the right thing, if you will. And on the back end, post-analytical end, and this is work that Dr. Lepasada did for a number of years, is we can now, when you send for certain tests, if a clinician gets a result back, they can order through the electronic health record a consultation by a pathologist, which is pretty remarkable, and it's billable, and changes the whole game, I think, over long periods of time, but what a CP pathologist actually can and does do. So there are things you can do with the enterprise. The other thing you can do, actually, is interesting, is that you can start doing things like say, okay, I want information from the electronic health record on all the specimens that are going to come to my grossing room every day. So I don't get embarrassed when the liver comes in with that, 0.5 micron tumor that the radiologist saw, but our pathologist didn't because he's slicing it, a centimeter, whatever. This can happen. You can perhaps get the preoperative note. Why do they do this? That kind of stuff. And it can come to our systems and link to our accessions. And it's a powerful thing to be able to do. Okay. I'm going to stop that for now. Okay. The opportunities are very large if you want to get outside of your department. You really should think about that. It's more fun, frankly. I mean, more interesting things. No one's asking me to change a font on some report somewhere. Just interesting stuff. And I spend most of my time, frankly, outside my department today. Okay. Outcome and qualities. How am I doing here? Okay. All right. Quality is increasingly important. Everyone, you all know this. I mean, it's importantly legally, financially, and operationally. And it's very, very, very much an informatics issue. It involves basically the appropriate collecting, standardizing, and managing of data. Either find out what's wrong, or how to fix it, or when it happened, and who did it, and that kind of stuff. It's all something we have to be able to do. Effectively, when I look at this, at least the AP side, the automation of laboratories is certainly a QA issue. Using a barcode across the department and track our specimens everywhere across their entire life cycle is an important issue. And then structured data to know exactly what we did to these specimens are important. And all of them are quality issues. But it requires a department-wide vision, even before that. I mean, when I first came to Mass General, we had this project where we're going to use the barcoding system to essentially do some important things in histology. Is we figure out, whether or not all the slides are ready to go to the pathologist, basically. It's a big issue for them because some of the slide gets delayed, and then the slides are sent to the pathologist, and they don't have one slide, and they call, and they yell. Everyone runs around. It's kind of embarrassing. So this is called slide reconciliation. It's called the end of the process. Great. We thought we did it. It was beautiful. Great. Everyone's happy. We said, okay, now let's do this in the slide room. So when slides come back from the pathologist, we know they're there. No, simple, except when slides leave pathology, the histology laboratory, Mass General, it goes to, let's say, the immunoperoxidase laboratory. What they do is they take another label with another barcode and place it on top of our barcode. And that happens several places, actually. So it destroys everything. And again, you know, this is something that it's not just an IT issue, but something that it just takes a lot of time to get people to understand that it's not your laboratory, it's the department's workflow. And I had to tell you that because it really got me quite upset when that happened. I thought we were doing something, we got nothing. Anyway, outcomes. Another very important issue and a very informatics issue. Clearly, what we've decided to do in our department anyway is look at an opportunity, which is that though our electronic health record knows a lot about our patients, they know nothing about the patients once they have been cured or when they got so mad at our scheduling system that they left and went to our competition. Or they went to Florida or something. We lose control of what happened to our patients. So there's a whole group, another PhD we've kind of hired, and he's got a whole group with him now, to try to figure that part out. It's kind of extend your electronic health record, kind of. It's an important thing. We do it in pathology largely because, well, no one else wanted it, basically. But also is that we are kind of independent of any particular field. And it's an interesting area. But more interesting, I think, is the issue of autopsy. And I know you're going to hear about this in some detail. I'm sure you will. But autopsies, the reason we did autopsies in the hospitals years ago was it was a quality issue. No one really knew what the surgeons were really doing or they could be trusted. This is, you know, this is when we had horses way back then, okay? Now when our institution talks about autopsies, well, they don't talk about autopsies. It was considered a complete waste of time for a whole bunch of reasons. Now, we are talking in our department now about doing something the military has done for a while now, which is basically use radiology tools to do an autopsy. There are reasons, this makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. First of all, you'll have more autopsies because you're not destroying someone's body. It's another test. If you want to add a needle biopsy to it, that's certainly possible. No one would complain about that, I don't think. And then you can actually do, for a live person, you can't radiate them that much. You know, there's a certain level you just can't go beyond or else they'll kind of glow or something. But for a person who's dead, you can go to higher voltages, higher resolutions. It's a nice thing to be able to do. Now, that's not happened yet at Mass General because people have not yet kind of bought into the idea that radiology can actually work with us or whatever. The radiologists want to do this. They want to do it badly, okay? So it's interesting. And it's a mindset issue, like I said before. If you have pathology, you want to do this, you'll get it done. If not, it ain't going to matter. The other thing is very interesting to us anyway. How many of you are members of the API, the Association of Pathology Informatics? Not many of you. Well, if you were members, you'd know about this. And you should be members. There's a company in Cambridge, right across the river from us. There's something very interesting. They've got a web community of patients of various, you know, basically chronic diseases. And these guys get together on the web and they basically share notes. And they increasingly do this with more and more specificity and standardization. So they can follow a patient through their entire life. We can't do that, not even close. So, I mean, while we're spending some money right now to create an outcome center in our department, that might just be a waste of time in a few years because, you know, there's another technology here to think about. Again, it's another digital issue in the digital world. Things change quickly. Okay, finally, this is probably the last part of the talk here. Probably the most important, frankly, is training in informatics. Actually, how much time do I have? I guess nothing here. Okay, then I'm gonna ignore this then. This is an old story that I can talk about if I had to kill another 10 minutes, but I don't have to. It's not that good a story anyway, so I'll ignore that. Okay, I just did a lecture. My residents came to me recently and said, we have to take the boards. And there's some questions about informatics on the boards. Can you help us? And they gave me what they got from the Osler group, which basically people, you know, memorize the boards. And it's pathetic what the boards are asking in informatics. And worthless. What's a byte? I mean, I've forgotten. I think it's 8 bits. But it doesn't matter to me at all. I couldn't care less. And we don't need, no one cares anymore. I mean, seriously. You know, that was important like in the 1970s, I think. So pathologists, they get this weird idea, the pathologists, that informatics is a bunch of geeks that worry about stuff that no one cares about and it doesn't matter. I mean, I was going to say that, I know that people talked about this morning, I think. So this is my 2-minute sentence about this. What I think we need to be telling pathologists is that, you know, what if I had ideal pathologists, they would understand process engineering. They'd actually specify something. And I don't want a PC repairman. I don't need a programmer, frankly. I just a guy who understands exactly what he wants to build and how it needs to be built. And he needs budgets. I mean, at least where I, most of the time, before I see this also, that someone has this, goes to an agency and say, I want to do X. And I'm going to do this wonderful thing. It's going to be fantastic. And they get the money. And this thing requires a huge database, 15 interfaces, you know, and a bunch of data conversion. And then they call you up and they say, can you help me? You know, it happens all the time. So if, you know, but we're not even training pathologists that it costs serious money to do stuff and please call us earlier. That even doesn't happen at all. That's the residency issue and that's one issue. I think the fellowship issue is even more important. My understanding after talking to the API again, who did an extensive search, that there are 4 programs in the country right now with active pathology in fellows. 4. In Michigan, Henry Ford, Partners, and Mass General. And Pittsburgh, of course. 4. Okay, that ain't gonna cut it. That's almost worthless, frankly. We're not creating enough fellows for pathology to drive its own future. It doesn't mean it won't happen. The future will happen. But I don't know, with basically creating at least 4 fellows a year or 8 fellows a year, we can really do a whole lot. We're buying products from other guys pretty soon. We do it right now, but it'll get worse. Okay. Worse than that, we are doing a horrible job of training the infrastructure. You know, the guys who can run, let's say, a PAC system, if you will, or can manage our data, curate our structured reports and that kind of thing. It's real hard to find these people, and they're not really being trained in that area. You can't find a person. And we're trying to do that. So anyway, this is wonderful. Right now, at our place anyway, sorry, we've got 2 fellows funded, one at Mass General, one at Brigham, and they kind of rotate around. It's great fun. We have 3 fellow postdocs right now funded. We'll probably get some more. These are all imagers right now. That will change. We've got 1 engineer trainee fellow, a student funded for 6 months in our lab, which is good. We have resident rotations. No one takes them, but they're there. And we've got a bunch of faculty members. Okay, and again, this is simply the way it's working. Our fellowship at Mass General is basically a partners fellowship. We have the main base at MGH. There's another group at the Brigham and the Medical Center. And then there's a group, one-man group, Bruce Beckwith, at the North Shore Medical Center in Salem, you know, up that way, where the air is clean and that kind of stuff. All right, okay. Again, I think I've just said that. We've been brainstorming about this, how we do this. And there's a serious proposal on the table that may not get anywhere, but it's a funny one. It's to buy or rent a large house near a large institute of technology across the river from us entice the students into our program by giving them whatever. I mean, candy, good projects. I don't know. I think we go. You know, it can get very, a Shanghai issue here. But we can. We're trying to find people to get involved, and it might come down to just going there. Okay, It doesn't cost that money to rent a big house in Cambridge, actually. Not much at all for a year. Anyway, so we're trying to get around this problem. It's a serious problem, though. And without this, I don't know what you're talking, what these conferences will get to in the next 5 to 15 years. Okay. Comments? That means I'm finished. Thanks. I'm done. Okay. A roadmap. You know, the future will happen. I mean, whether we want it or not, whether we do anything or not. I mean, technology is going to continue to drive the process. The needs of our clinicians will drive the process. Society itself, like this, you know, patientslikeme.org or .com will drive the process. The question really is what will look like and how well we control it. And I'm not quite sure I have a good answer for that. The number of people involved is really pretty limited. Our own plan, and it has been every place I've been so far, is to basically get the appropriate tools and resources available for a group of pathologists willing to try to use them. And then if that happens, that usually goes very well. But those are two things you definitely need. And so far, often we have one or the other, and not often both. Okay, that's what I got. Thanks a lot.